Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You're listening to the Utah Man Podcast, bringing you the latest news and analysis for your Utah Utes. Now, your hosts, Cameron, Ryan, and Scott.
Welcome on into the Utah Man Podcast. On this episode, we take a look at Utah beating up on their rivals in Colorado and looking ahead to the Pac-12 championship game. I'm Cameron, and we got Ryan.
Hey, Ute Nation.
In person.
Hey, Ryan. It's good to be back.
It's been a while since we've seen you.
It's going to be a big night. We got everybody here.
And we got Scott.
What's up?
Big week. Big week for the Utes. Going to the Pac-12 championship game this coming Friday. We have tickets. We're going. Super stoked about that. In preparing for this show, I went back and listened to a couple of our episodes that we've done this year. And Scott, I'm going to throw you under the bus. You pretty much said Utah would not be going to Vegas.
I did. I'll own that. Because after game three, who would have thought that this would happen?
Well, honestly, I think we all kind of felt like that. But yeah, I went back and listened to a couple episodes that we put out. And what a different spot this program is from the end of September. Just a night and day difference. And
here we are, after all of that, we're now co-champs with BYU in the Pac-12 South.
Congrats to the Cougars. I mean,
well done.
Hey, they're hanging the banner.
Hey, five wins. You know, still three under the Utes, but hey, we'll give it to you just because you tried hard.
And you're that desperate.
The de facto Pac-12 South title.
All right. So, I mean, obviously Utah beat Colorado this past week, 28-13. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this game.
They pretty much sleptwalked that 28
Utah
points.
Didn't want to spend a whole lot of time on this game.
I mainly want to get into the Pac-12 championship game. But let's
do a quick summary.
Utah did not care one crap about that game.
And you know what? I don't think Colorado did either. I mean, 64 yards rushing, 84 through the air. I mean, come on. I know our defense is playing at a high level, but give me a break.
Yeah, that was bad. And you got to give the defense credit, though. That was outside of the pick on the first series of the game, and they get into field goal range, and
special teams and sucking it up again.
The special teams touchdown. They didn't do it. They did nothing.
Special teams remembering their special.
What is up with special teams?
I don't know.
As much as I love Sharif Shah, I think he is not a special teams coach.
The only answer is Kyle took it back for the Oregon game. Things went well, and he said, "All right, Sharif, I'm giving the keys back to you." And Sharif quickly drove into oncoming traffic. I don't know. They're so inconsistent. It's hard to fathom.
And the one they ran back, he was kicked 5 yards deep in the end zone, and they still ran it back.
And we had dudes that drilled him, but just didn't wrap up. They literally hit him into the hole.
That's what Kyle said. Three guys missed their tackles, and the third one really bumped and pushed him right into the gap where he took off.
Oh, and then I think it was Noise. He was the last attempt, and his dive, I think he went backwards on his dive. Because at one point I thought, oh, he could get him, and then when he dove, he was like 10 feet short.
It was bad.
I don't know how he did it, but he did.
Oh, and then I still don't know what happened on that field goal. Was it blocked or was that just a bad kick?
It was blocked, but I think it looked kind of like it just came out low. And even on the next PAT, they got through the front of the line pretty quickly.
I think Witt needs it back for the championship game.
Oh my gosh, I'm so nervous. I'm so nervous that the special teams is going to blow it for us.
With this Colorado game, I will give Witt credit because he said after the game, yeah, it's hard to get up for a game like this. I like that he was honest about it, said they didn't have the juice like they did the week prior.
No.
And so
that's just natural not to. There was nothing on the line for this game.
Oh, 100%.
You could lose the game and you're still playing this week.
Well, even if there was something on the line, it still would have been hard after such an emotional game where the crowd was insane. I mean, it was just you were such a high after that game. You're going to come back down and you're going to have that's why they always say, I mean, those types of emotional games, when it's followed up by a kind of a lesser opponent, it's a trap game.
Mm-hmm.
And it most certainly was. And granted, obviously it didn't matter ranking wise, it did not matter really in the South race, but a loss there would have been really embarrassing heading into the Pac-12 title game.
One thing I did want to talk about, Scott, you and I kind of talked about this after the game in the stadium, Cam Rising. 14 of 23, 179 yards, 3 touchdowns, but a pick. And it just kind of seems like the last couple games, it doesn't seem like Rising has been playing at the level he has been the last couple games.
No, he hasn't been overly sharp. I mean, you go back the last 2 to 3 games, and Britton Covey and Solomon Enos are your only 2 wide receivers that are getting catches. Now, that obviously still very productive at the tight end position, and even to an extent, some of the running backs, but not a lot of targets for Devon Vele, which really surprises me of all guys. You know, Theo Howard has kind of been one of those where he'll get some looks here and there, but he hasn't been super consistent over the course of the year getting looks. I'm just surprised Devon Vele we're not targeting him more.
Well, it doesn't seem like he's on the field as much as he was. I know Enos is back, and I think Vele got a lot of run when Enos was injured. But Vele doesn't seem to be getting targets when he's out there, but not even out there as often.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, the focus is the run game, and in the passing game, the focus is to the tight ends. And you can't really argue that because of how productive they're being offensively. But I just think Oregon, and we'll get into this here in a little bit, but we're going to have to show some things in this game that we have not done, and we're going to have to be productive in the passing game. So that is a concern, Cam, and that's something that I think we'll address, and I think Utah's going to address going into this game. But Cam Rising definitely needs to come out sharper. I mean, even in the Oregon game, he had 2 throws that could have been picks in that Oregon mm-hmm. game that could have changed that game pretty quickly.
And you say that there's that one on the goal line in the second quarter that should have been picked. Honestly, I don't know why it wasn't.
Well, two really at the goal line, one in the north end zone and one in the south. Just not great decisions. Overall, he is making really good decisions, but there is a few times a game that you kind of scratch your head and go, what were you thinking there? And you saw that against Colorado again. So he's got to be a lot sharper. And in this type of moment, You're gonna get a very focused team.
Looking at the rushing attack for Utah, I mean, Tevion Thomas again, just another phenomenal game. 25 carries, 142 yards, 1 TD. Can I just say I'm actually surprised that Tevion didn't walk.
He's only a sophomore. He hasn't even played a complete season at Utah. I mean, he did basically sit the first three games of the year because every chance he got, he kept fumbling.
Well, and I say that because, and obviously, not everyone, Kyle said that not everyone that walked underclassmen are going to leave. They might kind of test the waters, get a draft grade, and then make that decision. I guess I'm just I was surprised, and a good surprise. Well, there's not even that kind of out there at the moment.
Well, and I think that's part just because of the running back position. I mean, you look at Zach Moss, who had 4 years of film and still only was a second round pick, right? So the running back position, teams know that they can get good running backs late in the draft. They're not spending high draft picks on them. And he doesn't have much film. He's been extremely productive, but I'm not sure there's enough out there that NFL GMs are going to say, yeah, he's our guy moving forward. Obviously, you know, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but I think that's good news that he'll be back.
And another phenomenal athlete there, TJ Pledger, finishes with 103 yards. TJ did walk. Do you guys think he's back?
I did prior to that video they put out that he was included in the walking commencement.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't anticipate him being one that would walk either, but I kind of envision him as one to just that's testing the waters, and if that grade isn't where he wants it to be, he'll be back.
Or he knows he's only got one more year and he wants all the reps somewhere. And he's looking for a starter role somewhere else.
He's already transferred once, though.
Yeah, but there's not even rules in college football anymore. I mean, guys can do whatever they want.
But look at this. Tavion's getting 142. Pledger's getting over 100. You can still...
Oh, for sure.
You can still be good enough as the running back number two.
Well, especially when you're playing at a place like Utah that loves to run the ball, and they do it really, really well, you are taking somewhat of a risk if you're saying, "Hey, you know, I want to go to a Mountain West team or some other destination." You don't really know what you're getting.
You don't know what the offensive line's like where you're going.
Exactly. So it is a bit of a risk. But again, we don't know. We don't know if he'll be back or not. Whether he comes back or not, I mean, this running back room is stacked. You've got Ricky Parks, who was a big, big commit out of Florida, who redshirted this year. You've got Jalen Glover, who's an enormous recruit out of Florida. He'll be a true freshman next year. I mean, if anything, I almost think Mika Bernard is the swing option here of that group. I would not be surprised to see Mika Bernard look elsewhere, just because we know he's talented. He's a good running back, and when he gets in there, he produces. I mean, he didn't really get an opportunity in that game, but he fits the bill. He's got great speed, and being number third on that depth chart, I'm sure that doesn't sit well with him.
No. And I mean, obviously, there's still two more games left for the Utes, and I'm sure not all the decisions have been made for those underclassmen, but I'm pretty sure it's safe to say Devin Lloyd will not be coming back, and he'll be missed on that defensive side.
He will be missed, and just think back a couple of years ago when Manny Bowen transferred from Penn State, and we thought, oh, here, good linebacker. And he bails, and we've got this true freshman that was going to step in, and we were all like, oh, boy. And look where, I mean, what a stud.
Well, and he was good out of the gates, too.
He was.
He's obviously gotten better year over year since he's been here, but he was pretty darn good in that 2018 season, which ended up being really important to for that that year and his role in the defense. But I'll tell you, man. When you just watch him play, I mean, he stands out so far, even above the rest of the guys on the defense. It doesn't look fair. He's so quick to the ball. He's so quick at reading what the offense is doing. He just reacts, and he's there, and he makes plays. He hits people. He wraps them up. If he doesn't wrap them up, it doesn't matter because they're still on the ground. I mean, he is a next level talent.
So my question though, linebacker though, is Sewell a guy that's just going to test the waters?
That's a good question, because I really expected him back.
I did too.
But yeah. I don't know his age, but I think he's older. I don't think he's Brent Covey old. Nobody really is. But you wonder if he's to the point saying, hey, you know, I want a shot at the NFL, and before I get any older, I'm going to take it. Or maybe he just wants to move on to that next phase of life. Or he's just testing the waters, and obviously we're not breaking any news or giving any insightful information here. But I was a little surprised to see him walking as well.
If they both go, that's even a bigger hole to fill. I mean, Carini Reed obviously has some playing time, and we saw his potential. But beyond that, I think the linebacker room seemed to be pretty deep. But a lot of those guys didn't see action this year. None of the Calvert boys.
No, I think the only other one was Hayden Fury.
Hayden Fury, and yeah, I mean, you've got a lot of young talent, but it's exactly that. It's young talent. And I think if Sewell ends up leaving and you got two to three brand new starters next year, I think you will see Utah take a look at the linebacking position in the portal to try and get at least one experienced guy to come in and help the young guys.
I think there was some talk about even Cole Bishop moving to linebacker possibly too.
Cole Bishop plays pretty much wherever he wants at this point. He just makes plays.
He's a baller.
That's what I love about him, is because as good as this defense has become, we don't force turnovers, right? We just don't. It's been like a month since we forced a turnover. And in part is we just don't have enough playmakers. I know Bishop's young, but he's that guy that just, he's going to make plays. I know he hasn't forced those turnovers yet, but he's the type of guy that is going to grow into that player that can make those impactful plays that this defense really needs.
Some news that kind of broke this week. True freshman quarterback Peter Castelli is entered in the transfer portal. What do you guys make of that?
I'd leave too if Rising had 3 years ahead of me.
But see, do you think Rising's not going to be here?
No, he's not here.
I think next year's Rising's at.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't see that.
He's old too. He was in the same recruiting class as Justin Fields, who just completed his rookie season in the NFL. He's not going to stick around two more years.
Well, this is his third year at Utah, and he's only a sophomore. He's getting up there, and if he has aspirations for the next level, he's got to pull the trigger sooner rather than later.
I just think that's something that, as college football fans, as Utah fans, you just kind of got to get used to now. I know that's been said a lot about the transfer portal, but I think we're really going to start seeing that year after year after year, where guys can be highly talented, highly, you know, star level recruit and bounce after 1 year if they're not starting, especially that quarterback position. So it's crazy, but it's a new part of college football. And it's a part that so far this coaching staff has taken advantage of. Cam Rising, perfect example. He was a transfer. But I think that's that you're going to have to deal with that as a coaching staff, and it's how do they deal with that moving forward when you can bring in a 4-star quarterback, but they're going to leave.
Yeah, and
we've already seen that with Tuttle, obviously Tuttle didn't pan out to a 4-star quarterback even after he left here. So,
well, that's the thing, you never do know, and these kids all think they're it. They think they're the guy. And when they don't get that opportunity early, they want to look for it somewhere else. I mean, Cam Rising did the same thing at Texas, right? He spent 1 year at Texas, didn't get the job, and we benefited from that.
Jaquaden Jackson,
same thing. And you know, hopefully that, you know, there's rumors out there about him and whether he'll be back at Utah next year. Obviously, nothing set in stone, and we don't know the answer to that. And hopefully, he is. But, I mean, if you lose two quarterbacks to the transfer portal, then you have a hard time because who's going to want to come transfer in behind Cam Rising? That's probably not a lot of guys.
That's when you hope Cam Rising's here for two more years so you can develop a younger guy.
Well, and you're going to have to.
And they have two quarterbacks committed in this class.
Two high school kids. But again, in that worst case scenario where you lose two, one of those guys ends up being your backup next year.
Yeah.
Do you want a true freshman as your backup?
And that's
typically,
that's
not a great situation.
And that's where I was going is while you have Rising here, you're going to lose depth and you don't want to lose that depth, especially ones that have been in the program that have learned the offense.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. We're definitely going to lose some ourselves. I think we probably lose more than we have in the past this year in the transfer portal. But like always, Kyle Whittingham and the staff, they're going to be aggressive. They've been successful doing it. And any holes that are either created or that currently exist will be addressed through the portal.
That says, don't get too low, don't get too high with the portal. Because at the end, I think everything kind of evens out, right?
And if you don't count your chickens before they hatch, obviously, but with the potential win of the Pac-12 championship and then if that happens, going to the Rose Bowl, that helps your recruiting big time, even in the transfer portal.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and especially if when you look at the talent that's coming back for next year and the potential there is to make another run at the Pac-12 championship game, and guys in the portal wanting to take advantage of that. I know we kind of went sidetracked from the Colorado game, but those, because it was the last game and they're recognizing the seniors and a lot of the juniors, that's just kind of been on my mind. And kudos to Kyle. I know there's a lot of programs that don't recognize juniors because it is a senior thing. But kudos to Kyle to kind of, let those players like a Britton Covey get that recognition that they deserve, whether they're back or not. And the ones that are testing the waters, just let them get that fan recognition. So just a big thanks to Kyle for doing that.
Thank you, Kyle. Love you, dog.
We're up against the break. When we come back, let's just start diving into the Oregon Ducks.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
That's right, Utah fans. The Utes are going duck hunting again. In less than 2 weeks after Utah destroys the Ducks, I'm jacked for this game. Oh my gosh.
Let's go.
I am jacked.
Scott's about ready to hit the bathroom. He's so nervous.
I'm ready to jump in the car right now and drive.
Are you nervous about this game?
Oh, I'm nervous. I've been nervous since Saturday evening.
He texted us on Saturday and said he was already nervous. Yeah, and we didn't even know who they were playing yet.
Yeah, I'm jacked. I'm so ready. I'm ready to witness Utah football history. And I'm nervous that it may not happen.
But if it does, we're going to be there to witness it.
Oh, my gosh. Come on, Utes. You got to do it.
What happens if you storm the field in an NFL stadium?
They tase you?
Yeah, I was going to say, they probably tase you.
So Utah,
hey, but I'm willing to find out.
So UW beat Oregon 38-7. And really, that game, Utah didn't do anything that special. They just played their game.
We did run it down their throats pretty specially.
Well, yes, what I meant by that is there was no trick plays. There was none of this double reverse passes. They kind of caught Oregon by surprise.
Not yet. There isn't. Get ready, Ducks.
TJ Pledger kind of alluded to the fact that we haven't seen a lot of stuff yet.
Oh, man. Guys, I'm so jacked. I don't know that I've ever been this excited and nervous at the same time.
He's not riding in my car.
I kind of think this is a different game than the previous two. I think the first one against Washington, right? It was just like, Utah's happy to get there, right? Happy to finally represent the South,
which
in that
happened
game.
To be our best performance. And they had title all game.
They had all the injuries going into that game, and then when they went up against Oregon in 2019, I think I was almost kind of like happy to be there, kind of feel. I think it's shifted where now it's kind of expected to win.
I'm gonna back you up on 2019. Utah was favored in that game. We're in the playoff. We were not happy to be there. Utah, I totally agree. 2018, you're happy to be there. You finally won the South. Let's see what happens. All right. You lost. You didn't have a starting quarterback. You didn't have your starting running back in Zach Moss. Expectations were not over the moon that you go beat a Washington team in 2018. Expectations had changed drastically because in 2019, Oregon was good. They weren't great, especially in that regular season. They struggled. They struggled at USC. They struggled and lost at ASU. And they just didn't look overly dominant. And so going into that game, Utah was completely dominant in 2019 going into that game. The last half of the season, they were blowing everybody's doors off.
And I think they went into that game thinking they were going to do the same thing, and they were probably overconfident.
And I'll tell you, when Blackman put that hit on the running back out of the backfield on that first series, I thought, man, we are sending a message. We are rolling these dudes tonight. And then we got rolled.
It was ugly. It was painful to watch that night. It was because that wasn't a Utah team we had seen all year long. And it's just like they had no answer for anything.
Well, offensive line was atrocious. No run game. Huntley really didn't do anything spectacular in that game. Mm-hmm. And it was just, I mean, another blocked punt. It all started then, guys. It all started that fateful night in 2019. But
it's time we break the curse.
It is. And break the curse, you say, Ryan. Well, good news, you fans. We've been talking, right? There was the November curse for many years where Utah struggled when the calendar turned from October to November. And if you remember, we had a friend from down south, far down south, Fernando, come on, and he helped us break the curse, the November curse. Well, we're 0-2 in the title games. I think we got to break that curse now, too.
It's only right, and there's only one man that can do it.
He did it once. He'll do it again. Our boy Fernando. Let's get him on the line.
Fernando, are you there?
This is Evangelist from the press.
Fernando, we're 0-2 in the Pac-12 title game. What needs to happen? How can we break this?
I'm going to be praying for everyone victim of witchcraft curses.
Well, we're in luck because that's what we need, Fernando.
If you are suffering under a witchcraft curse, I want to pray for you today in Jesus' name for your deliverance.
Thanks, Fernando. That was, I just feel better already.
Sorry, we shouldn't laugh at prayer.
Guys, if you haven't had a chance yet, go to cursebreak.com. Fernando is going to get this out of our system. So, Fernando, what else do you have to say?
By revenge, I say, broken off by the power of the Holy Spirit that come in, come out of them, come out of them. Every evil spirit attached to them that came through witchcraft.
The curse is gone, folks. Fernando!
It doesn't matter what they're wearing. It doesn't matter what time the game's at.
After that, I challenge the Utes to wear camo jerseys. Anything you want to end with, Fernando?
Say, thank you, Jesus.
Thank you, Jesus.
Amen.
Amen. Well, I'll tell you what. I'm feeling pretty good about things.
All you naysayer Utah fans, superstition is, it's gone. It's over.
And that's what we're here for, you fans. And as we were preparing for the podcast, it was almost as if Fernando was speaking to us, trying to send us a message that it would all be okay.
Ease is pain. Ease is pain. Ease is pain.
It's eased, Fernando. It's eased.
All right, Utah fans. I feel like we've done our part to help break this curse, this hex that's been placed upon us. After all of this...
This house is clear. I have exorcised the demons.
Well, I feel kind of like a new man.
Well, now that we have successfully broken the championship curse...
We've officially broken it!
A big shout out to Fernando. I know how busy he is, and for him to take time out to break the curse for Utah, that means a lot.
He's thinking about us, and it means a lot. It gets you. It gets you right here, guys. Right here.
I mean, this...
Getting a little emotional.
Utah is a worldwide program, apparently. I mean, even down in...
The world is our campus.
But we need to break down the game a little bit, because I think as much as we feel and loved the dominance Utah showed in the last game, we know we'll see a different Oregon team this week.
Most definitely.
Oh, I mean, Utah's ruined their playoffs.
Yeah, and embarrassed them.
On national television.
In front of 4.5 million viewers on that fateful Saturday evening. Yeah, it did not go well for them. And you know, I was kind of hoping that they would just come out and lay an egg against Oregon State. And they didn't. Oregon State did not play well. And it still ended up being, you know, a close game down the stretch. So, I'll tell you, though, it's going to be a different game, but I still think we come out on top on this. I know there's a lot of talk out there. It's tough to beat a team twice in a season, let alone twice in 11 days. It's not easy.
Our first trip to the championship game in 2018, Washington beat us twice.
Yep. And again, this is an Oregon team. They're good by all means. They are a good team, but they're not an overly dominant team. They're good on the run game. So it's going to come down to that defensive line again and the line of scrimmage. And as you said, right, they're going to give a much better effort. They're going to come out and want to prove something. And I think it's going to be up to Utah to kind of weather the storm that first half of the first mm-hmm. quarter. Because I think they're going to come out guns a-blazing. They're going to want to send a message. And I think we have got not only match the intensity that they come out with, but I think you got to take it to a whole nother level. You've got to run the ball, and you've just got to break their will early. Because if you can get another lead on Oregon and make them one-dimensional again, ball game.
Well, that's exactly what Utah did in that first game. And because of that, Travis Dye, who is probably their most dynamic player on offense, only had 6 carries in that game against Utah for 29 yards.
Yeah. You know, and you want to put it on the shoulders of Anthony Brown mm-hmm. and his arm.
make him throw the ball, make them do things that they're not comfortable with. Because we saw how that went in that entire second half. They did that one drive right out of halftime, scored a touchdown, really kind of on a broken play by Phillips. Outside of that, they just couldn't do anything through the passing game. And when we know that they're going to pass the ball, that just allows our defensive ends and the defensive line just to put that type of pressure and just get after the quarterback. I mean, obviously, I think Utah's going to have some new wrinkles. Oregon's going to have some different wrinkles in this game. Yeah. Whether it's trick plays, whether it's just new sets, new formations that maybe the defense hasn't seen. Because neither team has anything to hide at this point. Everything's on the line for both teams, so you're going to throw everything out there. Obviously, they're not going to go away from what got them here. You're going to still see a lot of 12, 13 personnel. We're going to run the ball. We're going to attack the seams down the field with our tight ends. We're going to do that. There's no question about it. But beyond that is where you sprinkle in maybe some five wide, do some more things with getting the wide receivers involved. I'm excited to see what Ludwig and Morgan Scalley have planned.
Well, and especially because, as we talked about with Colorado, Utah's really had 2 weeks to prepare for this game. Because no matter who they were facing, whether it was Oregon, Washington State, or Oregon State, it was going to be a team that they had already played. So knowing that, you knew that they were going to have to make some wrinkles, make some adjustments of what they have done previously. And so I think with 2 weeks to kind of prepare for it, I think favors Utah in this aspect. Whereas Oregon, they had a rivalry game that they had to win to get in. And so for me, it's what kind of emotion is Oregon coming into this game? I think a different spot than Utah.
Well, and behind the scenes, there's a lot going on at Oregon. There's rumors of Cristobal maybe heading to Miami. Their offensive coordinator, Joe Moorhead, apparently is the leading candidate for the Akron head coaching job. One of the coaches on the defensive line is rumored at another job. So if things are happening where these coaches are maybe getting some phone calls or maybe interviewing even behind the scenes, that takes their attention away. How does that affect the coaching staff? How does that affect the players knowing that things are going on? So there's a lot I think you can mix in, and you just don't know how this Oregon team's going to handle that, how they're going to come out. But I'm pretty confident with all said and done, they're going to put forth a much better effort against the Utes this time. And even though I think Utah's going to have the advantage fan-wise, they're not playing in Rice-Eccles. Rice-Eccles was special that night. Oregon said it themselves, one of the loudest venues they had played in years. And that affected them. And you're not going to have that to that same extent down in Vegas. So there's a lot of things that have changed in these 11 days. But the thing that I like, and I think plays in Utah's favor, is 11 days ago, they put a great game plan together. And it worked. Oregon game plan did not work.
So they've got to completely revamp it.
Right? And so Utah now can already take a successful game plan and still tweak it and still put even new wrinkles on it to keep Oregon guessing. Whereas Oregon, it's kind of back to the drawing board because what they plan to do that night in Rice-Eccles did not work. So they're really starting from scratch. And I think that's advantage Utah. Again, that doesn't mean it's a done deal, but I think that's definitely an advantage for the Utes and just, I mean, I even take it back just to the confidence level. These guys in 2019 going up against Oregon, I'm sure we were confident, but we hadn't played them in the season, right? And in the back of every fan, Utah fan's mind, Oregon scares people.
Yes. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. No, it's playing that name across the chest, playing that Nike logo.
Yeah. And you've seen what they've done in the past, had this type of speed that they have, their ability to score so quickly. You know, now this these guys that are going into this game Friday evening, they've played against these guys, and not only were they successful, they were extremely successful. That just gives them some confidence, which I think that confidence can somewhat offset any type of revenge or anger that, you know, Oregon's coming into this game with.
But see, for me, I think, yes, the Oregon's going to have that kind of chip on their shoulder because of their playoffs dreams were dashed in Salt Lake City. I still think, even though Utah got that win, I still think Utah still has a chip on their shoulder.
For sure.
From 2018, but not only just because of 18 against Oregon, but I think since week four of this season, Utah's had that chip on their shoulder for everything that they experienced and the losses in the conference play and the losses of Ty Jordan and Aaron Lowe. I think this team is just made up differently because of that.
Well, and Britton Covey said as much in postgame presser of Colorado that, you know, they took this tragedy and they've turned it into something beautiful, and they're playing for a higher purpose. And obviously, you know, all these guys have goals about, you know, getting to the NFL, winning the Pac-12. That's why some of these guys came back. Nick Ford, Lloyd, why they came back this year is they wanted this Pac-12 title. Well, now they go through all this adversity in the offseason and then they do it all again early part of the season. It's not just their goals they're playing for. It's almost like these tragedies have just brought every individual together, where now what they preach is family, and they're just playing together. And again, you know, when you're playing a team like Oregon and as talented as they are, I mean, they clearly out-recruit Utah easily year in and year out. They've got more talent from top to bottom. But again, this is going to come down to who's the better team. And I think that's where Utah can really show something. And I'm telling you, this game, in my opinion, the biggest game in the history of Utah football.
Yeah, and, you know, go back to your statement, play as a team. I think we've seen over the last 7 or 8 games, Utah is the team in this conference that is the best team. They play together. They play as a unit. They play with a purpose. And it's shown on the field. We saw early in the season Oregon go to Ohio State and win, and that's a great win, but they haven't been able to successfully put games together back to back to back this season, and they've been up and down. And I think if Utah brings the effort in their game that they've shown over the last 4 or 5 weeks, I think they're gonna win.
No, and I mean, you listen to what the players have had to say and how excited they are for this game and how this is why these guys came back. This is the goal. Their focus is there. I'm telling you, these guys are probably spending every waking moment in the facility watching film till late at night. These guys are dedicated, and yeah, I'm sure Oregon's doing the exact same thing. Those guys want to win too, you know, but it just, Oregon's won, since Utah's joined the conference, Oregon's won 6 of these.
That's crazy.
They've won the last 2. They're going for a three-peat. So I know that they want it, but Utah's never experienced that. These guys want to be the first team in the history of this program to bring home a Pac-12 title and play in a Rose Bowl. Now, with that comes some extra pressure, right? Because they want it so badly. So I think that's where they got to play this and make sure that they don't come out too fired up or maybe even too tight because they want it so badly. I heard Nick Ford on the radio today talking about that very thing. They've got to treat this like it's every other game and prepare the exact same way. Because otherwise, if you go too crazy on it, you play tight, right?
Yeah, well, and I think Kyle talked about that in the 2018 game, how guys were doing too much, trying to do too much. And so they were getting out of position. Instead of just focusing on their main job, they were trying to do other people's jobs at the same time, and that's where they got into trouble.
Yep. And again, what you said, right, it comes back to being a team. Trust your teammates, trust the game plan, go do your job. And Kyle preaches that constantly, do your job. And I'll tell you, I mean, it feels special. 2019, you could argue we felt the same thing, right? It's a special season. But there's just, with what this team has gone through, you know, it's hard to say anybody deserves anything in sports, because there's always going to be two teams that want it and that have put a lot of sacrifice into getting there and ultimately winning that. But it just feels like, man, this team, I know I shouldn't say it, but it just feels like they do deserve it.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think based off of starting back last Christmas, and then the tragedy of that, and then the Aaron Lowe tragedy, and I mean, just what they've built and how they've kind of rallied around each other to get to this point. It's almost like they deserve it. You're right.
Well, and ultimately, I think we can all agree, and everybody through the Pac-12 would agree, Utah, to this point, is the best team in the conference. They've proven that. They've won the most games in conference. Statistically, they're, in a lot of categories, head and shoulders above the second-place team in the conference in a lot of categories. Overall, they are the best team in the conference. But if you don't win this game, it doesn't mean anything. Mm-hmm. To prove that you're the best, this is the game you have to win. They've shown up twice. They've gotten to this point twice and just come up short. Man, for this program, for this coaching staff, and for these guys who have gone through so much heartache, I so want them to win this. Obviously, as a fan, the three of us, selfishly, we want this too for the Utes. You know, because this is something you'll remember the rest of your life. First Pac-12 title, playing in the Rose Bowl for the first time. You'll never forget that memory, ever, the rest of your life. But I'll tell you, man, these guys, be a storybook ending.
It really would.
To end it in the Rose Bowl.
You think about that, I mean, that it is a lot of pressure.
Yeah,
on them,
and that's where I think a Cam Rising and kind of his mentality really is helpful here. Is just he stays loose. You know, he's that, you hear it all the time. He's that type of leader. Guys are just comfortable with. You know, pre-game, every game this season, there's photos of Cam Rising, whether it's on the Ute walk, headed to the bus, whatever it is, and he's got a big old smile on his face. Right? He's just enjoying the moment. He's enjoying what he's doing. And that's what you got to do, right? Obviously, you're going to be nervous. But if you get too nervous where you're just so laser focused and you just can't enjoy it, I think that can affect your play. And I know we're probably diving into territory we're not qualified to talk about here, but I think we've got the right team and the right guys in the right positions that can keep this team in a mental spot where they can just come out and play their game, trust themselves, and just go out and just prove it. You got to do it one more time. You do it one more time, you're remembered forever.
Yeah, Pasadena, here you come. Go Utes!
I'm like gonna cry over here.
All right, that kind of do you got our thoughts around this game and where this Utah program is right now. We're going to take a break. When we come back, let's talk some Pac-12 and the news that's hitting in the conference. All right, so the big news in the Pac-12, USC has their coach, Lincoln Riley, from Oklahoma. I don't think anyone saw this one coming.
Out of left field.
Wow. Big time. That's a big time hire.
Oklahoma loses, you know, their rivalry game against Oklahoma State, gets knocked out of the Pac-12 Big 12 championship game. And the next morning, Lincoln's out the door.
It's unprecedented.
And as a fan of the Pac-12, that's a great hire by USC, and probably, in my opinion, something that the conference needs.
Oh, the conference needs great PR, because for so long they've just been dragged through the mud by literally everybody. And you know, I mean, obviously Utah's helped immensely with what they've done, and Oregon obviously, but outside of Washington and Oregon, you know, several years ago, Pac-12 has not been represented in the playoff. And ultimately, that's the downfall. That's what everybody gets judged off of. You know, even though the ACC sucks, you have Clemson, and they've still been representing that conference. Pac-12 from top to bottom is a lot more competitive, but just have not had that top-tier team that can get to the playoff, or at least do it consistently. And we'll see if Lincoln Riley can be the guy to do it. I don't know. I'm in the boat. He's going to do it.
Which makes it even more important than this is our year.
I mean, you could argue that, and I know, you know, there's a lot of opinions out there that, oh, we said that when Chip Kelly got hired, or we said that when
Herm Edwards
and whatever. And Utah's just maintained their level of play, continue to get better, and they're right there. And we will. Lincoln Riley, he's going to recruit like gangbusters. They're going to have so much talent, and they are going to be good. But they're not going to be unbeatable. And guess what? We're tough to beat, and we're tough to beat in Rice-Eccles. Yeah, we may not go on a run where we win four South titles in a five-year span or a six-year span. But I'll guarantee you, Utah's not going anywhere. But you give credibility to this conference by banking a hire like that. And then if he can be successful, it will help the conference in general. Yeah. Right? Because guess what? Oregon doesn't want to get passed over. They're going to up their game. Utah doesn't want to get passed over in the same division. They're going to up their game.
Competition breeds competition. And to your point, I don't see this league turning into a one-team conference where it's USC and just everyone else is just happy to get a paycheck.
If he's that good, USC has the ability to do that, though. Because the way that they will recruit, they're going to have four- and five-star guys at every position on the field.
They already do.
They do, but you look at Pete Carroll, what he did, and I know that's a different generation, but nobody touched him when they got it going. Nobody did. They controlled the Pac-10 at that time, and they won national titles. If, and it's a big if, it's a big climb, but if he can get there and kind of duplicate what he's done at Oklahoma, they're going to be tough.
Well, I'm not arguing they won't be tough. I think they can and probably will be the best team in the Pac-12. I guess my whole point is I don't think they're going to be untouchable.
No, they won't be.
In all honesty, though, he is a good hire, but he's not completely proven in his ability to win consistently, especially in big games.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a pretty good, for a 38-year-old, he's got a pretty good resume behind him. You know, three college football playoff appearances, six titles in the Big 12. He hasn't been a head coach all that long. And so he has won. Now, he didn't bring Oklahoma a title. He didn't even win a game in the college football playoff. And, you know, there's whispers out there that his offense, just like it happened with Urban Meyer, it happened with Chip Kelly, they bring a new offense, and it's nobody touches it for a while. And then teams slowly start to figure it out. And there's whispers out there that that's what's happening with him. And defenses, each passing year, defenses are going to kind of figure out a little bit better way to scheme against him. And I think you're already seeing that with what Oklahoma State has turned into and what they did in order to beat Oklahoma, and they just did it. So, yeah, nobody's invincible. Even Nick Saban at Alabama is not invincible. But along the way, they can be pretty good and pretty dominant.
And then some other news as far as coaches in the Pac-12. Unfortunately, to 1280, they didn't hire who 1280 has been pushing for the last 3 months. But Washington has hired Kellen DeBauer from Fresno. I'm that one kind of shocked me. From other names that we had been hearing out of that coaching search, is I don't know.
Fresno's had a good couple of years, that's a big jump to go from Fresno State to Washington football.
Yeah, it is. It is. And, you know, probably not the longest tenure at Fresno either. But yeah, there's a lot of people who think it's a solid hire. Definitely not a flashy. It's not going to touch what USC just did by any means. You know what? He'll probably be better for the program just because he's not a mess like Jimmy Lake. So right there, they're already looking at a better situation. So yeah, I mean, I don't know much about him, so I'm not sure I've got much of an opinion at least yet.
And then following that up, Washington State's hired their interim coach Jake Dickert, and you know I think Washington State fans should be happy with that. He got them one game away from the Pac-12 championship game, where, you know, just kind of like Utah, four games into the season, it could have gone south big time for that program. And then everything that happened with them, losing half their coaching staff, and for him to kind of get those guys rallied around, you know, kudos to him.
Yeah, I think he rallied the troops and did a good job, and they all bought in. It seemed like the team bought into what he was doing. So yeah, definitely good for him. But I think even bigger news is that Herm Edwards is still employed at ASU.
I did see that Herm will be back.
Thank you, ASU. We'll take it. Keep him there as long as you like.
I got a question for you guys. Will Justin Wilcox be the head coach at Cal? Meaning that he's going to get an offer and bolt, because his name keeps popping up.
It came up at Washington.
It did.
And he had some roots up there. I doubt he gets picked off, because Cal has not. I mean, they were pretty bad this year.
When he first got there, he kind of was able to.
He had a moment.
Well, he's even had moments this year. Like, they'll play a really good game and beat opponent they shouldn't. You don't think they should win? They should beat. And then the next week they just get steamrolled.
Now he may want out of Cal.
That's what I'm
just
talking
for the fact that. That city and that university are making it very difficult on him and his program and recruiting. So yeah, that's a tough one. I just can't see there be a ton of suitors for him with really the results they've been having.
Maybe Notre Dame will come calling.
You've heard it here first. Ryan's calling it. Justin Wilcox will be coaching the Irish. Quickly, just looking at the scores from this past week in the Apple Cup, Washington State beats Washington 40-13. Again, I mean, what Washington State did during that season, you know, good for that program, and hopefully they can get a good bowl opponent for them. Stanford gets crushed by Notre Dame, who's now looking for a coach, 45-14. Oregon beats Oregon State 38-29. Oregon State kind of made a run there at the end.
Yeah, they started off awful. I mean, just atrocious. That's what cost them that game. But yeah, they didn't make it close late.
And then freaking USC lays an egg. They had that game against Team Down South.
Well, yeah, I mean, Algier was trying to give it to USC, but couldn't hold on to the ball, but nobody from USC wanted to jump on it.
And Arizona finished the season at 1-11. They're looking for a D coordinator in this offseason.
Yeah, there's a lot they're looking for.
UCLA beats Cal 42-14. All right, so overall, I think it's a typical Pac-12 season where not a lot to talk about in the non-conference. I think really it's the Oregon-Ohio State game is really the only thing the Pac-12 can kind of, as a conference, hang their hat on. Definitely need to get better. Need to get better and at a conference. We'll see what happens in the future with the changes at USC and with this new commissioner, the changes he has mentioned, maybe even going to 8 conference games. I think will be interesting. There's even talks about getting rid of divisions. and just having the two best teams
and
play.
And here's a thought. What are your, right off the cuff, what are your initial opinions or thoughts now that this hire at USC, do you want to be in USC's division?
I think it makes a compelling argument to not have divisions or not be in the division that USC's in.
Right, because, you know, if you get rid of divisions, it's then the top two teams, you know, regardless of where they're located at the end of the season to play for a Pac-12 title. If USC does become dominant, winning the South just becomes really difficult.
And I really think that the Pac-12, if they go to an eight-game schedule, I think they will model the SEC and really try to protect the better
teams. Oh, for sure. For sure.
And I think going to eight games, getting rid of conferences really helps accomplish that. But, well, we'll see. Kind of goes down that road. Before we end this episode, we'll go ahead and do our predictions for the game. Scott, please tell me you're picking Oregon.
Yes,
please
stay on that bandwagon.
I've been pondering this earlier in the day before we recorded. I was on the phone with Fernando and trying to get his counsel on this. But at the end of the day, I'm going to take one for the team. I picked against the Utes
at USC
a few days ago and picked Oregon over Utah, and that went extremely well. So for the sake of the Utes, I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to pick Oregon 31-28.
Ryan, where are you going?
But it's all Utes, man. That pick is strictly some divine juju to twist things up.
All right. You heard it here first, folks. Scott picked Oregon.
Oh, thanks, PK.
All right. I, of course, have the Utes winning. I think it's going to be a closer game than the last one. I got Utes 31, Oregon 24.
So for this episode, I wore my USS Salt Lake hat, my nice gray U of U hat, just to spite Scott.
Hey, I'm team gray now, dude. It doesn't work on me anymore.
Wearing this in support of the Utes, what they did to Oregon, wearing this uniform, wearing these colors.
You have a uniform on underneath that?
I got Utah 38, Oregon 27.
Going with 38 again.
38 twice.
Back to back 38 points. I'd take that. I'd take that in a heartbeat.
Is there another special teams touchdown for the Utes in there?
As long as there's not a special teams turnover or a special teams giving up a touchdown.
All right. So one last prediction on top of this. How many Ute fans in Vegas?
I'm going to go 30,000.
Ooh. That's nice. That's big.
I'm not quite sure the number, but I'm guessing 60%, 70% Utah fans.
Well, I asked for a number, so you got to give me a number.
if there's 30,000 people going down, we better leave early.
What's your number, Cam?
I'll go with Ryan. I think 30,000.
I'm going to say, just to one up you guys, 31. Get in your cars, you fans. Find a way. Go support this team. And guess what? I have a good feeling about this. In the words of the great Ben Crenshaw, all I'm going to say is I got a good feeling about this.
I like it.
Ryan, where can people find you on Twitter?
Ryder Cup quote right there, baby. People can find me on Twitter at Drum and Feather. Drum, the letter N, feather.
And Scott?
You can find me as a Pac-12 title champion at UteMan_forever. Let's go, Utes! Come on!
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram, Utah Man Podcast, our home, UtahManPodcast.com, and anywhere else from a podcast, we are there. And hopefully Utah gets that ring and that trophy of the Pac-12 championship. We will be there in Vegas. We hope to see you guys there, too. And go Utes.
Go Utes.
Go Utes. See you in Pasadena, Utes.
We're good. Let's cut it.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are their own and are no way affiliated with the University of Utah.